There was a fridge magnet that changed my life. It said, show me your five closest friends and I will show you your future. Now, this is the kind of saying that means very little when you're a kid, but I wasn't a kid at the time. I was sitting in the principal's office with my son who'd gotten himself into trouble on the playground. And it just makes me think, oh, the joys of parenting. Well, in this week's episode, I'm going to talk to you about how this magnet made a difference not only in my child's life, but in the way I approach learning and reading books. I hope you're going to find this helpful. Let's get into it. Welcome to this week's episode of the Read Well podcast. My name is Eddie Hood, and I'm your host, where I believe it's more important to read well than to be well read. So grab your favorite book, open up your notes, and let's get ready to learn something fascinating. Hey everyone, welcome back. I'm so grateful that you are here with me today talking about books, the greatest subject in the entire world. Just as way of an update here, things are going so well at the Read Well podcast. For many of you, you've been messaging me privately, also joining the Read Well community, following on YouTube and Facebook. It's just been so wonderful to feel your support. But in the private reading community that I launch, we're up to now 50 members, which is just mind-blowing. We have so many people there sharing their favorite books, talking about the things that they love, taking the 30-day focused reader challenge that I've built, attending live book club with me, and so on. So if you're looking for a community that is all about these kinds of books I talk about, things with a philosophical nature or a psychological lens, people who really appreciate learning and nonfiction, we definitely talk about fiction as well. In fact, my favorite author, we'll talk about him today, is Fyodor Dostoevsky, a fictional writer. So we do not turn away from that. I want to point that out. We're just always having conversations about these works of art from that philosophical lens. So again, if you're looking for a community that likes to have these deeper conversations, I'd love to invite you there. And the best way to get there is to go to thereadwellpodcast.com. That's the website. And then up in the top, you'll see in the navigation the word community. Simply click on that. You'll be taken to my private reading community. You can create a free account there and you can start having conversations and joining in on the fun. Okay, let's get back to this fridge magnet. Now, when my son was in trouble, I have four kids and I love all of my children dearly, but they have at times felt like juggling balls and trying to keep things in the air. Kids who experience the grown-up life, you know, going from roughly 5 years old to, 18 years old, is just full of turmoil. There are problems on the playground, people don't get along, we're learning how to behave in society. And so I would often get these calls. Well, not often. I have wonderful kids. They are well-behaved. But every now and then, I'd get a call from a teacher or a principal, and I'd have to go in and figure out what was the problem. Well, one day, my wife and I got one of these emails, and we went into our son's principal's office, and we sat down, and there was a magnet on the principal's desk that said, show me your five closest friends and I'll show you your future. Now, at face value, you would think that he had that there for the child because the message is, hey, if you hang out with the wrong kinds of kids, you're going to have a poorly crafted future and you really need to be selective with who you spend your time with. And that makes sense, right? I mean, if you think about your friends growing up, how did they have an influence on you? I think this is an easy to understand point, but let's dig into this a little bit further. I realized sitting in that chair in that principal's office that the magnet was not there for my son. He was too young to really care about aphorisms or any kind of, you know, how-to life hack kind of statement. He was just worried he was in trouble. He wasn't thinking about larger philosophical questions. And so I realized that magnet was there for me as the parent, that the principal was in a gentle way sending me a message, which was, hey, the people your son hangs out with matter. And it is important for you as a parent to pay attention to that, to filter out the kids getting in trouble, and to introduce kids who are respectful, hardworking, and come from families that you can trust. My wife and I went home from that conversation and talked all night about that magnet. We still talk about that magnet to this day. It comes up occasionally. But it changed how we parent our kids, and I'm so grateful for it. From that day forward, we started really watching the kids coming in and out of our homes. And there have been several times where we've had to cut relationships off because we could see that things were going south. And that if my son or daughter were to continue to hang out with specific people, that was not going to be good for them in the long run. And that's always hard to sit down with your child and say, hey, you know that friend you have that's really important? we're going to have to stop hanging out with them because of X, Y, and Z. Of course, my kids never understood at the moment why. It felt like I was ripping their heart out of their chest, and they would cry and get angry and slam doors and what have you. But they have always come back to me after and thanked me for helping them in those decisions. In hindsight, they would say, you know what, Mom, Dad, you were right. I'm so glad that you got that person out of my life. They were really sort of draining me. They were putting me into bad situations. They were making me feel uncomfortable about myself. They were putting me into sort of emotional states that I just wasn't capable of handling. And they didn't say it quite like that, but you get the idea, right? They were grateful, and they can see now that life would have been very different had they hung out with the wrong people. Well, I'm always looking at life's little lessons and thinking, how can I apply that to the Read Well podcast? Because I create content every week, and it comes in the form of YouTube videos and podcasts and what have you. And I've been thinking about that magnet, and I realized that it applies to me as a reader. In fact, I'm not a very social person. I like my quiet time. I spend all day working and creating content. I work really hard in the private reading community that I have. And I own an accounting business that keeps me busy by day. So at night, I don't have a lot of friend time, especially because when I walk in the door, my four kids are there needing help with homework and the like. So my best friends, outside of two people who are actually my best friends, my best friends are found in books. I turn to them for emotional support, for understanding, and for a view of the world. Now, for people who are not bookworms, that probably sounds pretty pathetic. Like, oh wow, this guy has no friends. His friends are in books. That's really sad. But I think it's beautiful. You know, these are the kind of friends I love because they have a lot of valuable things to say. They are well thought out, and they don't make me feel bad about myself, right? They are always supportive and always there to help me improve my life or learn something new. They are the ultimate friends. I got to thinking about this and realized that my five favorite authors are shaping me as a person, much like the kids my children hang out with are shaping them. If I consistently spend time with certain authors, they will change my worldview. They will change how I vote, how I father, how I eat, everything. So it is really critical to be aware of who you're reading and why. I think it's so important that we read widely, right? That we don't get stuck in a rut and only read a specific type of political book or a specific type of religious book and so on. Because then we end up living in the herd. And in philosophy, the herd is a very common term, which is just that human beings themselves are herd animals, much like cows or sheep. We feel safe amongst the many. But there are downsides to being in the many. Now, I'm not one that's like, yay, anarchy, let's, you know, whatever. I think there's a lot of value being in the herd. However, you also lose your identity, you lose the ability to think for yourself, and you kind of just go with the flow. It's very easy to get lazy when you're in the group. And so this is the nice thing about reading widely, is it allows you to break out of the herd for just a minute, look around the pasture and say, hey, am I happy where I'm at? Is this where I should be standing in my life? That's a thing that we all probably should do more often than we are. But let's get back to this main idea of the five authors that you spend your most time with. You probably are like most readers, where you don't have five authors. You just read everything that's interesting to you. You've read a couple fiction books, some nonfiction books. You've just bounced around and used book recommendations given to you, which is a beautiful thing. So I'm going to ask you to do an intellectual experiment with me here if you can, which is that you sit down and think about the idea that if you could only have five authors that you could read from, let's say, you know, you're going to a deserted island for a whole year, and all you can do is take five authors with you. Now, you can take all of that author's books with you. So you might end up taking a huge suitcase full of books. I don't know. But you only get to pick five names. Who would be on that list? This is a fun exercise because, one, it tells you what your current biases are, right? We all have biases or prejudices. We don't think we do. We think we're fair and emotionally just and kind people. But when you peel back all of the layers, you have preferences, you have biases, you have a way that you like things to be presented to you. And when things mismatch with all of those biases or prejudices, you feel like sandpaper, right? It just bothers you. We're all that way in terms of the way people look, the way people act, the way people dress, the way people clean their homes, the way people drive their cars, and so on, right? So it's really interesting to create this list and then step back from it and ask yourself, how would this affect my personal worldview if I continue to spend time with these five authors and read all of their stuff? What would my life be like in the next year? Hey everyone, I want to take just a quick second in the middle of this podcast to tell you about Highlightish.com. Think of highlighting a book, but add ISH at the end. Highlightish.com is the tool that I use to make better book notes and to organize my writing. It's where I go to capture my favorite passages, annotate them, and then to turn that research into essays, blog posts, or research papers. If you're someone that wants to get more out of the books that you love and you want to turn that into great output, go to Highlightish.com today. Thanks for listening, and let's get back to the show. So as you're thinking about this exercise for yourself, I would like to ask you a couple basic questions to get the ball rolling. It's really important that you don't just listen to this podcast, but that you do this exercise because one, it will tell you a lot about your reading habits and who you are, and then it will allow you to challenge yourself and say, wow, I'm a little narrowed in the way that I read. I might need to widen this up a bit, or I'm reading way too widely. I'm all over the place. I need to get a little more specific here. So the first question I would ask you is this. When you sit down and write your five authors out, what is the main criteria for picking an author for you? Is it entertainment? Is it knowledge? Is it their style of writing? Is it that you have some sort of connection with them? Why are these names landing on your list? Why are these authors important to you? The second question I would like to ask you is, what are you hoping to gain from reading their works? Because every author sits down with a purpose in writing their book. They are trying to convey a message to you, whether they're fiction or nonfiction. They're trying to package something nicely, a group of ideas, into a nice little gift, and then transmit that to you over space and time through paper and word so that you can receive that gift, unpack it, and do something with it. That's the entire point of a book, right? So what is it that you're hoping to get from these five writers? And finally, the third question I would like to ask you is this. The writers on your list, are they there because of your own decision, or are they there because somebody else has influenced you and you are now reading that kind of stuff? This is a critical question because, again, we often are in the herd and we don't know it. We are often being influenced by the people around us, by our churches, by our governments, and so on. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm not. All I'm asking you to do is to consider your larger social norms and ask yourself, wow, is this author on my list because I want them to be on my list? Or is this author on the list because my parents tell me I should behave a certain way and this author reflects those behavior traits? That's probably a good idea. Go through all of these authors and ask that question. Now, you're probably saying to yourself, all right, Eddie, this is great and all, but who's on your list? I'm going to tell you who's on my list. So if I were to pack up all my belongings and I had to go live on a deserted island for a year and I could only take five authors with me, here are the five people I would take and why. And before I get into this list, don't let my choices influence you, right? Because they need to be on your list because you have something specific you want to learn and it is your choice that are there. Don't just take these recommendations and say, yeah, that sounds good. I'll add that to my list, right? You need to really think about this because not only are you choosing books to read, but you're choosing how you will be influenced. That is a big deal, people. A really big deal. I don't think we often realize how easily we accept ideas, how easily we just go with the flow and say, well, that person over there said this. They stated it in a factual way and they look, the person's wearing a suit, so he must be right. She's in a beautiful dress, so she must be right. I'm just going to believe it and go with the flow. This happens all of the time. We often don't look into the research, the footnotes. We don't ask the critical questions of ourselves. We just go with what everybody else is believing. So just because I'm mentioning these names on my list does not mean they should be on yours. But here are my five authors. The first author in no particular order is Friedrich Nietzsche. So Nietzsche is a philosopher. And the reason why he's here, as you know, I love philosophy. I spend a lot of time talking about that on our podcast. But of all of the philosophers out there, he is my favorite for several reasons. First and foremost, Nietzsche was, he is what you would call an iconoclast. An iconoclast is somebody who pretty much goes in and challenges cherished beliefs. And you know, this is the kind of person that he's not doing it to be mean. He's not doing it to be angry. He's just simply trying to get people and shake them up a little and say, hey, what do you believe? Let's question it so that you can see whether it's true or not. And a lot of people, you know, myself included, can really value from that in our life. So Nietzsche is often considered the philosopher that killed God, right? Because he came in and he made everybody sort of question their religious foundations. So that's just an example. I'm not suggesting to read Nietzsche in order to crush any spiritual belief. Many people read Nietzsche and they have a very strong spiritual background, which is a beautiful thing. The point here is that we should look at our morals, which is something he questions heavily, where our morals come from, our virtue, why we think something is good versus bad. He asks us to question our existence and whether there's a God or not. So many things, but these are really critical questions. And the reason why I like Nietzsche is because he writes with so much fire that it is just a powerful reading experience. He is very passionate when he talks. It is not a passive sort of theoretical framework. It is a man on the top of a mountain, just like, you know, trying to like shake the world with his ideas. And they're big ideas. I don't agree with all of them, but I definitely find them fascinating and definitely worth the time. Just to give you a quick idea on one of the ideas that Nietzsche had, and there are many. So he came up with an idea called the eternal recurrence, which is this idea that if you were to have to live your life in the exact same way and go through all of the same decisions and all of the same pain and regrets and what have you, again and again and again, forever, right? That constant resurfacing of all of the drudgery of life and your pains would probably affect the decisions you're making today. And you would, instead of making so many stupid decisions, instead realize, wow, I don't want to live this way for eternity. I'm going to try and make some better decisions. I'm going to go out and do what makes me happy. I'm going to find my way to my own personal meaning versus just doing what I'm told, living in a job I hate, going to a church I don't quite believe in, voting for a political party that doesn't really align with my beliefs, whatever. He would make you really consider those ideas and own them. If you're going to make this decision and you're going to live this way, you need to own it versus just kind of go along with the herd. Okay, so that's why I like Nietzsche, because he just shakes you really, really hard. The second author I would take with me is Plato. So Plato is he's kind of the grandfather of all Western philosophy. And one of my favorite books is The Republic, where he is writing in dialogue form between his teacher Socrates and many young thinkers in society. I like Plato because it's easy to read. It's fun to read, and there are so many sort of allegories and ideas in here that as you begin to read them, they get more and more meaning, and you really can. It's like applicable philosophy. Although it's old, you can grab this information, and you can now go and do something with it. I spoke a while back on the podcast about one of my favorite allegories in The Republic, called the Ring of Gyges. I won't cover that here again, but it's very similar to J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings, where we have this like magical ring that can make the wearer disappear. And the philosophical question is, if you had a ring that would allow you to disappear, would you be as morally good as you are when people are watching you? So these are fun questions to think about. That's why I like to read Nietzsche and Plato. They pose these concepts that I could probably chew on mentally for a very long time and not get bored. The third author I would take with me to the deserted island would be Fyodor Dostoevsky. This is a Russian author who wrote my favorite book of all time, Crime and Punishment. Dostoevsky wrote several books, including The Brothers Karamazov and The Idiot, and so many wonderful tales. Now, the reason why I like Dostoevsky is because he's coming at things from a different angle of Nietzsche. Dostoevsky was very much a believer in God. He was a strong Christian, and he was also fascinated by philosophy. So you've got this man who loves to look at things from a philosophical perspective, but also is a very strong Orthodox Christian and is trying to make the two make sense through really powerful stories. So the reason why I have Nietzsche and Dostoevsky on my list is because they're opposite sides of the coin, and they allow me to think about the argument from all perspectives. If you've never read Crime and Punishment, I highly recommend that you check it out. The main character in there is a gentleman named Raskolnikov, and I'm not going to ruin it for you, but here's the main philosophical question. If there is something you could do that is completely evil, like horribly, horrendously, just awfully evil, but in so doing it, there are many good things, many charitable things that would come out of that in the end. Is that act justified? So in other words, is it okay to go out and do a horrible thing if good stuff comes in the end? That's the real overarching idea of Crime and Punishment. And you get to watch this character, Raskolnikov, juggle with this idea and then live with the consequences of what goes on. I don't want to, again, ruin it, but I think you'll love it. Especially if you're looking to get into Russian literature and Dostoevsky. This is a good first novel. It reads easily. It's a book that you can read once a year and always get meaning out of and enjoy more and more. The fourth person on my list would be Emily Dickinson, the poet. So I'm not a huge poetry person, but I do really like poetry. The reason why I'm not a huge poetry person is simply because my TBR list, my to-be-read list of nonfiction and fiction is just so massive, I rarely sit down and read poetry. But when I do, I'm usually limited to a couple of people that I really like, and Emily Dickinson is one of them. I love her poetry for several reasons, but one of the things I like about it is it has layered meaning to it. So you can read her poems and over the years learn more and more about her symbolism and the things she's trying to convey. So I'm never bored with her poetry. It's never, you know, a poem about a rock and a tree and, well, it's just a rock and a tree. She really is trying to convey deeper meaning, and it's fun. I mean, you can take classes online that are just dedicated to her work, and you can spend semesters just ripping apart a poem, and every day you're just like mind blown. The lady was a genius. She really was a genius. She's on my list because if I was on a deserted island, I would like to have some poetry with me so that I could get that lyrical voice in my head. If everything is simply prose or narration, then I'm missing a part of the storytelling process. I really think there's a place for poetry. And her poetry in particular, I think, reads beautifully. The meaning is always profound. And she was just very talented. So yes, Emily Dickinson is number four on my list. Number five may or may not surprise you. I'm not sure. I actually get not a lot of flack, but I get some flack on the message boards and the direct messages in my social media because people always say that I only talk about nonfiction and philosophy, and it's okay to read fiction and genre fiction, especially. So things like Stephen King and all of that stuff. I wholeheartedly agree. I love all of that stuff, but I tend to talk about these other types of books the most because they're what just drives my passion. However, I do agree that if I'm going to be on this deserted island, I am going to need a lot of entertainment. I'm going to be bored out of my mind. Well, I won't be actually because I've got four previously stated authors who will keep me mentally engaged. But I do think it's always good to have a fictional book that is simply in your reading repertoire just for entertainment because that is so much fun. So for me, this author is the great and wonderful Agatha Christie. I grew up on Agatha Christie. Her work I just smile whenever I pick up a book with Hercule Poirot in it, and we're off and we're solving a mystery and we're on a boat sailing through the Nile or we're climbing the pyramids of Egypt and we're trying to find the murderer. I love it. Agatha Christie, she just taps a happy spot in my brain, and I could read Poirot books just all day long. They're great. In fact, I thought earlier today, how cool would it be to have a goal of collecting every Agatha Christie book? I've only got a couple. The rest I've, you know, rented or borrowed or whatever. But I think I actually might set out to acquire every book she's written. I don't even know how many that is. I should know. It's a lot. The lady wrote a lot of books. Now, I don't know how accurate this is, but I just did a quick Google search, and it says that she wrote 66 novels. The idea of having 66 novels, all with the mystery behind them, would just be fantastic. What a cool way to build out your library. That would be a lot of fun. And in case you're wondering, yes, I'm also a fan of Miss Marple. The cozy mystery is great. She is fun to read. So now the job of laying these five authors out is to step back from them and say, okay, if I surrounded myself with these five authors and that's all I ever read, how would that influence me as a person? I've got a lot of philosophy on here. I've got some poetry. I've got some murder mystery. And so it's sort of a fun exercise to really think about who would fit the list for you and why. You know, I'm sure These authors have many different things in common, and I'm trying to get a well-rounded view of both fiction and nonfiction and philosophical thought on both sides of the coin. I'm trying to really look at everything from every angle. It's challenging with only 5 authors, but I would love for you to try and do this yourself. Hey, if you found this episode helpful, I would love to encourage you to go to thereadwellpodcast.com where you can subscribe to my newsletter. Every week, I write a topic related to reading motivation and reading habits. So if you are wanting to be a better reader, but you just are finding it hard to sit down and get into the book and get your mind focused, that's what my newsletter is for. Every week, I send you a short message with one of my book recommendations for that week, and then an update on what's happening in the community in terms of the book clubs that I'm hosting or the reading challenges that I am issuing out in the world. So again, if you would like to grow that side of your life and become a better reader, consider going to thereadwellpodcast.com and subscribing to the newsletter. Thanks for listening, and as always, remember to read slowly, take notes, and apply the ideas. I'll see you next week. If you'd like to take your reading to the next level, then head on over to our website at thereadwellpodcast.com. There you can get access to my weekly newsletter as well as up-to-date show information. Also, don't forget that I learned software development on the side just so that I could build a program to help us make better book notes as we read. If you're interested, go to highlightish.com. Think of highlighting a book, but add ish, I-S-H, at the end. highlightish.com. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll see you on the next show.